This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Mario Kart 8!
Welcome back to a very special episode of the Kit and Krista podcast. Today, we wanted to look back at the entire life, almost 10 years, of Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, with the final booster course pass set of tracks coming out, this whole big project.
It's finally
which
over.
Which somehow made it 10 years, has wrapped up, so it feels like a great point to just look back at all of the, how did we get to this point, and maybe look a little bit ahead to the future.
Yeah, and to start out, we were at Nintendo collectively for over 30 years. So we've been through the majority of this 10-year cycle life of this game, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, we started, what was your first year, 2007?
Yes.
And we left in 2022. So we saw basically, you know, all but the very end of this project.
Yeah.
And I was actually the public relations lead on the original Wii U version of Mario Kart 8. And we were sort of racking our memory. And I think we found out that you were the lead for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on Switch.
Yeah, we're going to get to why we found that to be hilarious. Because I do remember now that I worked on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on Switch, but it was actually a funny story, so we'll save that for later on in this episode.
Yeah, so we know our stuff, if you're wondering who are these people talking about.
That's
this.
That's true. We've been through it.
Yeah, so I think we need to start with Mario Kart 7 before we can talk about Mario Kart 8, actually.
Yeah, and because I was actually the co-lead on Mario Kart 7.
There you go, yeah. So, you know, this game came out in December of 2011.
Yeah.
I remember, obviously, the launch of the 3DS was extremely rocky, extremely turbulent, a very concerning time within the company because we were going from the great stability and success of the Wii and the DS to now the 3DS and then in the near future, the Wii U.
Right.
And everybody inside the company was like, just hold the fort until the end of the year. We have a Mario Kart game coming.
That's right. And I remember, like you said, it was extremely rocky. And frankly, the launch of the 3DS was very lackluster. And there was no like hitting of sales goals. There was no celebration of a successful launch. And also, we talked about this before in some of our other videos, like there just wasn't a strong launch lineup for the 3DS.
Steel Diver?
Anyone? you know, we're all spoiled, right, by the Wii, the Switch days where we have like crazy launch lineups. And I think because of how rocky the 3DS was, lessons were learned for the Switch launch. But this game was basically what all hopes and dreams were pinned on. And it wasn't coming until the end of the year. It was a December release.
It's unusual for a game of that size to come out in December and sort of indicates like we are doing everything we can to squeak this out while there's still time in the holiday season to push sales of the game and also sales of the 3DS. Remember, we had to cut the price of the 3DS. We had the ambassador program, my ambassador certificate,
my ambassador,
proudly framed and hanging in my home.
Yeah, like the crazy news stories about Mr. Iwata cutting his own salary was all in this time period.
Right. So it was a very concerning time. And again, yeah, everybody was just like, just hold it down until we can get this game out. So that's an interesting place for it to be, and kind of, you know, really started to cement, if it wasn't already cemented by that point. I mean, on the Wii and DS, it sold, you know, tens of millions of, like, you know, this is like one of the most critical franchises that we have. And I think before it was like, oh yeah, we got Mario, we got Zelda, Smash Brothers is up and coming. Like, oh yeah, Mario Kart's good, but I don't think it was entirely in that echelon at that point.
I think so too, and I think the desperation for actual, like, software games for 3DS kind of forced it to be that, especially inside Nintendo, because we didn't really have other things like Smash or Zelda or Mario, like traditional, you know, Mario games to fall back on. This was like our only hope. And so I think from a marketing perspective, like, a lot was done to launch this game. I mean, I have ridiculous stories about the stuff that we did for this game launch, including building carts in real life.
When are we going to hear that?
Customs. Please tune into a future episode of the Kit and Krista podcast. But, like, this was one of the craziest launches because I think people just inside the company just really started to see the importance of and the power of Mario Kart and really, like, saw this as a way to drive hardware sales. And I feel like that perception of Mario Kart has carried over into Mario Kart 8.
Yes. So kind of from a game context, you know, I think if I was to just do off the top of my head, like, a tier list of Mario Kart games, I'd probably put 7 near the middle.
Yeah.
There are some parts of it that are good. There's some parts that are frankly just unremarkable.
Yeah.
But it did introduce some gameplay aspects that, you know, carried over and played a big role in 8, namely being able to customize your cart, getting all these different pieces and putting together a cart that sort of reflected you. And also this aspect of, you know, gliding through courses, going underwater, kind of breaking out of the normal course idea.
Right, right. Yeah, introducing the glider and just, like, opening up the creativity in terms of the different types of terrain and tracks, I think started in Mario Kart 7. And obviously you see that even in the beginning of Mario Kart 8. And then, of course, now that we're at the very end of Mario Kart 8 with however many, like, how many courses are we at? Like 90-something courses or whatever. Like, you see that creativity has only gotten more wild and crazy and great. But that idea of what we think is a Mario Kart course, what you can do in a Mario Kart course, that seedling didn't get started, I think, until Mario Kart 7.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And, you know, in the end, the game sold fine. You know, the 3DS did eventually, you know, stumble its way to becoming a decent success for Nintendo, and, and, you know, that was one of the early building blocks, but, you know, nowhere near the explosive sales of what had come before or what would come after.
Right, exactly.
So, Mario Kart 8, then, that was first announced at E3 2013, and, you know, as would happen, you know, our team would go up to Redmond and see these games, like, right before E3, because we were going to be talking about them, and doing interviews on them and needed to be knowledgeable about them. I remember that the first time seeing this game very vividly.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this was also like sort of the sad Wii U days, as we like to call it, where we knew that the hardware wasn't doing well. We were kind of down the dumps as just a company in general, like a bit, you know, low in terms of the mood because of very lackluster sales and launch, and we knew we were in a downtime. So again, when you have these pops of something great, you really, like, hold on to it because you've been in this period of just, like, down for so long. That's what I remember most about it, was I think Mario Kart was sort of that start of, we still have some great games. There are some great games for Wii U. The console isn't doing that great, but these games are, like, awesome, you know? And that was kind of like my first little glimmer of hope and realization that, like, it's okay. Like, we're going to be okay. Like, we still have these great games to, like, hold us through. And I think when we're seeing this game for the first time, like, I was really struck by just how bright and colorful, vibrant it was. And yeah, it just gave me like a glimmer of hope, I think, in that kind of dark time. So that's what I remember most. What about you?
Yeah, so in my illustrious career in video games.
Oh, illustrious.
There are three games that gave me the OMG feeling of I'm seeing something incredible and this is going to be like a big deal. Yeah. One of them might surprise you.
Well, one of them is definitely Breath of the Wild.
One of them was Breath of the Wild, which we saw a few years later.
Yeah.
This was another one of them because I was like, first of all, this game looks incredible.
That's the thing.
Even today, this game looks incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't call it the graphics were realistic, but there was a sense of realism in a Mario Kart universe.
Yeah, exactly.
And like graphical fidelity and effects and speed that we didn't see in previous games. Mm-hmm. And there was just something about the visuals of it. I was like, this is a next-gen Mario Kart game.
Right, it felt
because
very next-gen.
A lot of the previous ones, like especially Mario Kart Wii, got a lot of criticism of like, this is lazy, this is like the series might be kind of falling off.
Right.
But that was like, no, this is like a fresh new take. Mm-hmm. And it felt so good to drive. There were so many characters. The courses were really creative and fun. I came away from that. I was like, my jaw dropped.
Yeah.
First time seeing that game.
Yeah.
The other game, for those curious, when I worked at Bandai Namco, Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm.
Oh, wow.
Which, at the time, was the closest thing to no, this is a PS3 game.
PS3, okay.
The closest thing to watching like an actual Naruto episode.
Okay. That's cool.
Absolutely. Visually incredible game.
Okay.
That's nothing to do with Mario Kart, though.
Yeah, but definitely.
Shout out to Naruto, though.
It is very rare to get the goosebump feeling with a game. And when you touch the controls for the first time of a game, it really, that first impression means so much. And I think this game really just like nailed that first impression. Because everything that we did during that first time seeing the game really just like blew our minds.
Yeah,
like, I totally agree. It's hard to put your finger on what made it feel next gen and what about the graphics was so special. And even when I play Mario Kart today, 10 years later from this moment, I still...
This game holds up incredibly
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah. I still, like, I just played the booster courses not 2 days ago.
Right.
2023. And I was like, man, this game looks and just feels great.
Yeah.
You know, feels great. It feels like it's ageless, mm-hmm. you know? And that's something very incredible that was built in right at the start of when this game launched.
So as far as the development leads, we had Mr. Kono, who was kind of one of the original, you know, creators of Mario Kart overall. And he eventually went on to oversee all of Nintendo's work in mobile games, which is notable where we got Mario Kart Tour.
Right, right.
And then we also had Mr. Yabuki, who was new to us. He'd obviously been at Nintendo for some time, but was new to us in this kind of a role. So I think it was interesting to have this kind of, and you see this a lot in Nintendo projects now, kind of like the old guard meeting like the young upstart developer who's got all these fresh ideas.
But giving them the guidance from their deep knowledge of working on these franchises for long periods of time. Mr. Kono, like side note, is like the nicest person ever.
Yeah,
like, he is so sweet and so nice. And then Mr. Yabuki, obviously, was working on the series, and he also goes on to work on Arms as well. And you guys might know his crazy Arms moves at another E3, but he's been on the Mario Kart.
Yeah, so when you wonder, oh, how come there's not an Arms sequel? It's like, well, the guy in charge of it's got better things to do.
I was just going to say, like, that's exactly why. Like, he did a little project with Arms, and then now he's probably working on Mario Kart 9.
Game sold 3 million or sold 50 million? I wonder where I'm going to put my time into.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's probably a tap on the shoulder there. Maybe focus on this thing.
Right. So the game made a pretty good impact at that E3, and everybody came away pretty happy. Obviously, you know, the specter of the Wii U just kind of hung over us, but we kind of, you know, went right into our launch planning. And, you know, the big talking point for us was the whole anti-gravity aspect of it. That was like one of the key messages that we had. I'm sure if you went to look at the back of the box of the Wii U game,
there's going to be an upside down something
right there.
Yeah,
you know, very in your face about that, which I always thought was interesting. When I play the game, I don't really get that much of a sensation of anti-gravity.
Right.
Like, you can tell, oh, this is very dynamic, there's a lot of movement, but I wouldn't say it plays really much of a role at all in actually playing the game.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking to the developers about the anti-gravity. I was really trying to understand it more because I had the same impression you did. Like when I physically, you know, got my hands on a controller and played and was experiencing that, like I didn't couldn't really tell. But they were really like pushing us to talk about it, and especially about like this thing like where, you know, usually in Mario Kart games, you want to avoid hitting things because that slows you down.
Yeah.
But like in the anti-gravity mode, you want to hit things.
Right.
So they were really trying to like do some sort of like mind trick, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, this is the big difference is that you can like run into objects in other carts and have this sort of like speed boost. But I think that this kind of... You know, I don't want to call it like a gimmick because that could be kind
That's
of...
That's absolutely a gimmick.
It's a negative connotation, but they definitely called it a gimmick. I hate calling
Japanese
it.
Developers love the word gimmick.
I don't like the word gimmick.
Somebody,
it sounds
we
negative.
Need to have an intervention on the meaning of this word.
Yeah, they don't know the... I don't think they...
They think it's cool.
They think it's cutesy and cool.
I think it means something that's cheap.
I think it's like throwaway.
To distract you from something that sucks.
Right.
You know?
That's exactly what the connotation is
in
English.
Yeah.
But anyways, they called it a gimmick, but... I kind of feel like this was very gimmicky.
It was.
Yeah.
So it was interesting that we had kind of, you know, built this whole campaign around this game feature that maybe or maybe was not all that compelling.
Right.
But I do remember this was around the time of, hey, the Wii U's not doing great. We do need to start to cook up some new ideas for marketing. So there were a lot of new things that we did around this that, you know, for Nintendo at the time did feel pretty innovative.
Yeah, yeah. This was the famous, like, you know, where social media started to get a lot bigger as well. And I think this is when Nintendo started, like, their first sort of foray into, like, meme culture.
Well, we had the Luigi like death stare was like red meat for that right out of the gate. And that was one of those interesting early conversations of like, should we get involved in this? Is it something that like, is it going to become lame once Nintendo steps in? As so often happens, once the brands enter the conversation,
no longer cool.
It becomes lame.
Right.
And I think we did do something quite late as was our case because we had to talk to a lot of people about it and make sure everybody was okay. But that was a legitimate phenomenon.
It really was.
Out of the gate for that game, which was a nice little boost for us to get just some broader conversation around it.
Yeah, and I think, like, usually these kinds of trends come and go so quickly. This one, like, lasted a really long time.
You'll still occasionally see this
pop
up.
You'll see it sometimes, and it's still not lame.
Right,
And you know what's really special about this one, too, is that...
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
It's so interesting that usually in, you know, any kind of Mario game at the time, especially in like 2014, we weren't really focusing on different characters and their personalities very much. Like that was something that they, you know, Nintendo would kind of shy away from. Like focus on gameplay, focus on, you know, the actual, you know, that kind of stuff, but don't focus on the characters, don't focus on their personalities. But this one was like straight up, you know, Luigi personality highlight.
Right.
And it was so rare, but I think it kind of started the wheels turning, like, oh yeah, these characters can have like these backstories and personalities that we could highlight.
Right. You know, you and I obviously went very heavy on it on Nintendo Minute, which I'll pat myself on the back. I'll say that was a very forward-thinking show. But we did. I do remember I also worked on videos that were, for the first time, really focused on, like, the kid audience on YouTube, where it was like, let's get, like, a kid host and come up with these, like, little, like, gags and skits that are very kid-focused. And, like, we spent a lot on those. Like, we spent a lot of time on those. And, you know, that's, like, since then has always been a big emphasis for Nintendo of, like, you know, bring in new kid fans, new kid players.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was like the first time that we were really consciously trying to do it versus just assuming like, oh yeah, kids love Nintendo.
Yeah,
don't exactly. have to do anything there.
Or like Nintendo used to have this way of looking at like who plays their games. They're like, especially with the Wii U or the Wii era, it's like everybody plays our games, not 0 to 99. Yeah. Or like whatever. It's like, no, a 0 year old and a 99 year
old. I'm 100 years old and I can't play?
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Not? I'm
time
not
to born time
yet?
To kick off this mortal coil.
I'm in the womb and I can't play Mario Kart.
Not
dang
for
it.
Not for zygotes, sorry.
Not for zygotes, yeah. So it was very unique to have like something focused on the characters, something that was acknowledging like a social media trend, something that was targeted towards a very specific audience. Like those are things that Nintendo has never done until the launch of this
right.
game.
So the other thing that was very unique about this game was, you know, we started to hear around the time of the launch, like, oh, there's going to be a lot of like post-release content, mm-hmm. which at the time was not new for video games in general, but was very new for us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the first Nintendo game that had DLC, I think, was New Super Mario Bros. 2 on the 3DS,
right.
You know, which didn't predate this by that much. But we got a lot, even on the Wii U version.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one of those was infamously
terrible.
This Mercedes-Benz free update, which I remember quite clearly working on this. And I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, that was like a real shocker.
This was shaky.
Yeah, and it definitely was so not like Nintendo to do something like this. Like, Nintendo hates things where it's like, quote, borrowed interest.
Right.
Where it's like not something that, you know, is natively in the game that you can talk about from a marketing perspective. You're like borrowing this, I guess, the interest of old people, like old rich people that have Mercedes-Benzes somehow, which was just bizarre. Like, it didn't match up with the game at all, and it was just such a strange partnership.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was just like Nintendo operating from a position of weakness.
Exactly.
And like, what can we do? Let's even bend our rules a little bit to just drum up something. So I would, you know, never expect them to make a deal like this.
Ever again.
And honestly, I was surprised when this was included in the Switch version as well. I figured they would have been like, we're getting rid of this.
Sweep that one under the rug. Yeah,
yeah. No, and I remember they made this ridiculous ad in Japan with like the buff Mario guy with the scary, like big nose and all of this. So I was very concerned about this. The reaction was not as bad as I think people just approach as like an oddity of like, oh, that's weird and maybe funny and silly.
Yeah.
Versus Nintendo's sold out.
No one talked about it as much as, like, for very long.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of came and went.
Right.
Like, it sort of, then people just ignored it, I feel.
Right, right. So, after that, we did get kind of these two really big, substantial DLC packs. There was the Zelda pack, which came out November 2014, and then the Animal Crossing pack, which came out in April 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was notable for a lot of reasons. You know, it introduced a lot of really great new tracks, but also, you know, we got out of just the Mario
Universe.
Character set.
Yeah.
And we were like breaking down the walls. It's like, well, now we got Link in this, we've got all these Animal Crossing characters mm-hmm. in it. And I think when you start to think of like the future of the series, like this is sort of where those ideas maybe are put into motion.
Yeah, exactly. And I think again, this is another example where if Wii U was in a better state and Nintendo was in a better state in general, they would not consider these kinds of crossovers.
Okay.
Because they're very precious about, you know, the DNA and the core values of their IP. Like, even the Mario Kart team, I think, were kind of in a little box of, like, what Mario Kart is. It's called Mario Kart for a reason, you know? It's not called Nintendo Kart. So I really do think like that these kinds of like loosening of these guardrails came about because of where this game sits within the, you know, the history of the company, and because it was launched on this hardware that was like very bad. So I think these are some good things that came out of a shaky time. Not the Mercedes-Benz one, but like definitely opening it up to characters outside of the Mushroom Kingdom universe, and like adding these, using your, you know, being more imaginative with like what kinds of things you can include in Mario Kart. Like, I think that's a good thing for the series in the future.
You know, I never really thought about it like that. And I think maybe the reason was that it was just so well done.
Yeah.
That it felt like a logical extension of the series versus like this panic move of, oh my God, we have to stop the bleeding immediately.
Yeah, I don't think it's like panic, but it's like we need to do something. And like it was very accepting as a whole during that time in the company. We kind of lived through that where like this was the time where Mr. Iwata was out there like doing crazy stuff.
Yeah,
and this was the time where the company felt very open to new ideas because of its position. Like in the Switch day, no.
Yeah.
There is no room for new ideas because it, like it's working, so let's just do the bare minimum. You know what I mean? So I think it may not be like I'm panicking, like let's like, you know, poop out these packs, but more so we're open to these new ideas.
Yeah, I was just so surprised at, you know, how fully fleshed out these were. I mean, sometimes with DLC you like question the value of it. Like, am I really getting a lot? Like, you got a lot.
You really did.
In this.
Yeah.
And it was great to play, and it felt like this major new expansion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got, like, you know, it's like the courses, they put so much effort into the music. Like, remember those F-Zero tracks with the orchestrated versions
so
of, like,
good.
The F-Zero music?
And the little details, like, in the on the Zelda packs, like, all the coins turned into rupees.
Right,
like,
right.
The Animal Crossing, the different seasons. Like, they did so much love
picking up
went
bells.
Into that. Yeah,
it was
exactly.
It was just so well done. We just mentioned it now, so I gotta say, like, the soundtrack on this game is, like, God-tier soundtrack.
It is the best. I mean, just play that on repeat at a big band orchestra.
I have listened to this soundtrack outside of the game for like a ridiculous amount of time. We did a video of us a whistling competition, which is the dumbest thing one of the dumbest things we've ever done.
First of all, you can't carry a tune.
I was great at that, by the way.
No, you weren't. You're tuned. You're off key.
But like, gosh, there's just so many parts of this game that the quality was just through the roof on this game. Some other things that we got as free updates along the way was the 200cc mode.
Yes.
Which I'm frightened to play as.
Never go higher than
at a lot of times.
That's tough.
And then also once Amiibo came out with Smash, we got all of the Amiibo Mii racing suits.
Those are cool.
Which further expanded kind of the IP situation in Mario Kart.
Yeah. We all got very excited to have our little Miis.
Right,
in
little baby Kirby, or holding on, or get your like Mega Man suit, or I like the Pac-Man one.
The Pac-Man one's good.
Yeah, they were all just great.
So cute.
The one other thing I would say about this game that was noteworthy, like right out of the gate, was, you know, Nintendo's got this very shaky reputation with online play. The online in this game was just good from day one.
Yeah, it just worked.
It's not got
very basic.
Every bell and whistle you could come up with in an online game, but it's extremely functional. It was super smooth. I don't know why. I'm not a technical guy in this way. I don't know why whatever they used for this game can't be applied to other
like
games.
Smash or something
that just don't work.
Yeah.
But what an incredible thing to have for this game.
Right. I mean, this game hinges on multiplayer.
Yeah.
Playing with other people.
I mean, this game is still fun to go play online, and there's a ton of people on it.
Yeah, we play all
the
time
online. You get into races, like, right away, and it's totally seamless.
Yeah. Incredible stuff in 2014, for sure.
Just incredible stuff for Nintendo, period. How did this happen?
Weirdly can't replicate it in other games.
I know.
I don't know why,
but
whatever.
So, you know, this game goes on to sell, in Wii U terms, quite well.
Right.
But again,
a little shaky.
You know, a few generations before, on the Wii and the DS, we were in like 30 million territory. So it definitely felt, there was a damper on that. Because it was like,
we just couldn't. We had a limitation with the hardware.
We are not living up to the potential of this series because we have this hardware that's holding us back.
Right. So we ditched that.
Right. So, you know, we all started to turn our prospects ahead to the Nintendo Switch. And hey, right there, when the Switch was first revealed in that trailer, there was that guy in the back seat.
Oh, that's right.
Doing his little Joy-Con Mario Kart play.
That's right.
Right. And, you know, that was so interesting because at that time, Nintendo didn't confirm any of those games.
Right.
Like, we're not announcing a Mario Kart. We're just showing what it could look like.
What it could look
like. Hey, it's a possibility. This is just a video. We're not announcing anything.
Right.
But obviously that did go on to become a game. And obviously that did go on to become just a major, you know, trend on the Switch of let's re-release these games, let's bring them to a bigger new
There's
audience
potential
on the
there,
Switch.
Obviously your install base is huge now.
Right,
on the Switch,
right.
And then later on we got tons of stuff like Donkey Kong and all sorts of other Wii U games that didn't really meet up to its full potential.
Right, right. So the launch of the Switch was in March 2017. This game came out very, very shortly after.
Right.
In April 2017. Right.
Obviously, the launch title for Switch was Breath of the Wild, but that was a historic...
1-2 Switch, excuse me.
I'm sorry, I forgot all about the cow milking. My bad.
Jeez.
Obviously, 2017 goes down in history as one of the most incredible years of video game launches, especially for Nintendo, obviously, with like the most stacked launch year in terms of games. Again, learned a hard lesson during those... sad 3DS days of never to do that again. Have your games ready to go when you have a new console, or else people are going to fall off pretty quick. So they were very, very aware of that. And these things were just coming out like one after the other.
And, you know, as you sort of hinted at early on, like the funny thing is, like we were so focused on all the day one launches of the hardware and those handful of games that we had on day one. This really did honestly feel like an afterthought for us.
It totally fell to the wayside. I was racking my brain trying to remember what we did for the launch.
Who worked
Mario
on this?
Kart
what did we do?
And then I realized it was me. And the reason why I don't remember, because I was the hardware lead for Switch.
Right.
So I was launching the hardware.
Right.
And I was like, we must have done something for Mario Kart 8. This game sold like, you know, like however millions of copies. It's always number one on the charts, you know, even now. I'm like, what did we do? And I realized that we didn't even do any separate launch campaign for this game.
Yeah.
We just let it come out as like a proof point for why you should get a Switch. And it was like, and it always just was shown in like a long list of
games.
Like
a sizzle reel or something.
Yeah,
or...
it's like, oh, by the way, you can also play Mario Kart 8.
Right.
If you didn't play it on Switch or on Wii U or whatever. And it's fascinating to me that that was our, like, approach to it. Because this game, without doing anything at all, and still do nothing at all, really, has just sat at the number one spot in terms of sales for, the entire life cycle.
I think it's fair on one hand because... nobody knew that just a relaunch could be that big.
Yeah.
Like, I think people are like, oh, it's Mario Kart. People will like it. People will buy it. But nobody was thinking like, oh, this is going to be, you know, through the whole generation. This is going to be our top seller. This is going to smash records. It's going to be perpetually number one. We're going to do a Black Friday bundle every year for the rest of our lives with this game.
Yes.
Nobody was thinking that way. And I can sort of understand it. But it is funny, like, how low-key... the launch was.
Right, right. It was so just like an afterthought. And I think because of that, frankly, Nintendo, we were surprised at like how well it sold.
Yeah.
Like we would laugh every single time. We're like, oh, it beat like the game that we put like all the effort into again without doing anything. Why do we bother? But I think that's what sort of spurred the team on to then do all of these things for it, like the DLC, like the booster packs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was very much like a reaction versus it being like a planned out
thing.
Yeah,
there was probably way more marketing done for it post-release.
Yeah.
Like because it way can, anytime it was like, oh, you know, it's the new holidays, like what games are we going to put front and center? Like, or there was some other, you know, just kind of generic gift buying opportunity. Like this was always like top of the list.
Yeah, and like you said, it became a Black Friday bundle for like... 5 years.
That's going nowhere.
As long as there's a Switch bundle, you're going to get a Mario Kart.
I know. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So, you know, in terms of what was in this, so it had all of the DLC kind of bundled into it, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
It did have this expanded battle mode, which was one of the big criticisms for the vanilla Wii U version was that it didn't have, like, you know, a proper battle mode. Mm-hmm. Like, you were just doing it on the tracks that you were racing on, which it wasn't very fun.
It wasn't very fun,
honestly. And we brought Splatoon into the fold
That's right.
As well. So you know, not a ton of new content, but what was in there was notable and substantial. Mm-hmm. So it did help it to feel more than just like, you know, a lazier sort of port and re-release of that. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff there, but yeah, like it pretty quickly became this perpetual seller, which again, certainly not based on anything that we did. It was just based on, you know, the strength and the interest in Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And that cachet that had been built up over time. Again, 30 million people on the DS and on the Wii,
yeah,
you know, bought that game. So there was just this pent up demand for, you know, how long would that have been? Like, you know, 10 years or so.
Right, exactly.
Of people wanting to get back into it. So, right. So that
and
was fascinating.
And it's just one of those games where, like, you can underestimate it as just, like, some racing game or whatever, but it's one of those games where it's like a must-have in everybody's new system library. Like, you just have to buy it. It doesn't matter. Like, even if you're, like, some casual person that doesn't play a lot of games, like, this is the one.
Yeah, you know, I actually think, you know, for myself, you know, through the life of the Switch, that my total hour count that's the highest of any game, and it might be this, like more than any of the Zeldas, more than anything else. I think just cumulatively, I have just come back to it again and again.
Right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, it's like
that. I think everybody's like that. And like, you always break it out when someone comes over, you know, you're perpetually going to have fun playing this game.
Like, an underrated feature that can be annoying if you are playing with good people is that the feature, the auto drive and the auto steering, is kind of amazing. Because people will say, like, oh, you know, this game is fine for people who don't play games. But a lot of times it's not. Like, you do need to have some basic ability or knowledge of how video games work.
Yeah.
But in this, like, you can truly give it to somebody who has never played a video game in their life and turn those things on and, like, they can have a good time with it.
It's fun, yeah.
Which I'm a little surprised that more games have not learned from that of, like, like super baby mode.
This, like, is like super
literally,
baby
literally
mode
for babies. Yeah. Like wave the controller.
Yeah, like a 2-year-old.
Like, hey, you're racing.
It's fun though.
Yeah.
And they feel involved.
You are still playing it. It's not like a cheat. But sometimes it is on by default. That's the annoying part.
Don't do that.
So sometimes I'll be doing a race. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. And I'll see that little antenna in the back. I'm like, oh, I've got to restart.
Yeah, restart.
Darn it.
That's right.
Right. But that is kind of an underrated, mm-hmm, like, I don't know if you'd call it an accessibility feature. But, you know, in the true Nintendo spirit of everybody can play this game, actually everybody can play this game.
Right. And we really had, like, the most office tournaments around this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, the most competitive thing ever. Like, I couldn't believe the... Talk about death stares, you know? People were giving death stares to each other down the hall. But we were, like, deadlocked in these Mario Kart inner office tournaments. It just speaks to, like, the power and the broadness of this game. Like, everybody wanted to play this game. Everybody wanted to play this game all the time with people around them, you know? And it was so fun.
Yeah. So, you know, the game would get these sort of regular updates, but we weren't really adding new content to it until, you know, very late in, I think it was probably, so the Booster Course Pass was announced in February 2022. So I think it was 2021 when we first started to hear about that.
Right.
And the first time I heard about this, like, I thought my leg was being pulled.
You're like, you gotta be kidding me.
I was like, first of all, we're doing new content for this game like 5 years later, and you're doubling the number of tracks.
Right.
This does not sound believable. Yeah. Somebody is trolling me right now.
Yeah, I know. It was shocking because it was just so late in like the life of the game. We're like, why? And also, like, it was already selling so well.
Right.
So, like, why? You don't need to do any of this. But that's fine if you want to.
I mean, it was a very unconventional move because, you probably could have argued, like, we don't actually need to do anything.
Right.
But, you know, I think as far as continuing to keep the trajectory of this high, you know, continuing, you know, I have to imagine that this game has a big impact on NSO subscriptions, you know, keeping people plugged into that. I think there's a lot of, like, bigger picture kind of business businessy things at play with this. And I mean, this has just been a wonderful addition. Again, it just wrapped up, but they doubled the number of tracks.
They kept you going back 5 years later.
Yeah, I mean, it was truly an event every time one of these packs dropped. Like, they didn't, like, sustain for, like, a month, but for, like, a week or so, like, everybody was going back and people were talking about it. We were making videos about it, and it did feel like this special sort of thing. I would argue that overall, the quality of these tracks were not quite as good as what was in the original game. But they got pretty close.
Yeah, they were pretty close. I mean, some of them are a little bit more generic than others. I also think they wanted to find a way to bring in some of those Mario Kart Tour courses. Yeah. We should talk about Mario Kart Tour a little bit because that was definitely different. And as you mentioned, Mr. Kono went on to lead the mobile team.
Right.
And, you know, the mobile stuff for Nintendo has been very sort of up and down, mainly down. So, you know, there is sort of this idea of, like, what kind of really powerful Nintendo IPs can be brought over to mobile to make it feel not so down.
I don't know why Mario Kart Tour is not, like, the biggest mobile game ever.
Yeah.
You'd think it would be, right?
But somehow it doesn't really feel right.
Somehow it hasn't happened. Like, it's fine to play. I've played it, you know, a fair amount. It's fine. You know, it does have all the kind of, you know, money grab things that a mobile game is going to have. But yeah, for some reason, it never really clicked on in a big way, the way that you might have expected, given the pedigree of the series. And frankly, you know, like the amount of effort that Nintendo put into making the game, like that was not a slap together sort of game.
Yeah, none of the mobile games really are.
Right.
They're really quite high quality, but somehow it doesn't click.
I mean, they are still operating at a lot of the mobile games at this point. They've shut down. But yeah, they did want to find a way to bring over some of those courses that they had. So, you know, the idea of Tour is it's a lot of those courses are set in real world locations. So, every booster course pass release
has a couple of those
included. And as somebody who dabbled in Tour, I had kind of mixed feelings about it. I don't always love the juxtaposition of Mario in the real world. B, those courses were very focused on the route changing every lap.
Yeah.
So unless you had played it, you know, 5 to 10 times
and actually
memorized it, there was a lot of like, oh, I did great on lap one, but I did terrible on lap two because I had this other turn that
no
I wasn't
idea.
Ready for,
yeah.
and I don't even know where
and
to
also,
go.
And also, it really hinges on, like, if that city is actually very landmark heavy.
Right,
or else
it's
very hard to recognize. You're like, you're just...
Yeah, sometimes it's just like, oh, so I'm in a city.
Like, Los Angeles is one where I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
What? Like, I don't know these landmarks that well to, you know... understand, like, the appeal of this.
Right.
So that was a little bit interesting. I mean, Mario Kart Tour, again, I think they're just trying to, like, bridge over a little bit because they did not get the big, like, crazy mobile success with Mario Kart Tour, and there was obviously effort put into those tracks. It might as well bring it to an install base on Switch that is huge that would be able to experience those because, like, I really didn't play many of those courses.
Right.
They were new to me, So that was something.
But, you know, they did continue this good trend of, you know, releasing the older courses, but in a lot of ways really, like, remixing them. So, in the last pack, like, they did have this Bowser's Castle track that was from the Super Nintendo, the very first Mario Kart, which is just completely different.
It looks so good.
And, you know, they added, like, all this verticality to it, which was obviously not in the original version. So, and I think that's just a great, you know, ongoing thing that they have going for them is, like, now we banked this just great library of tracks through history that people have nostalgia for that we can keep tweaking, you know, depending on the kind of game that we're making. So that's just super valuable.
And it's always, like, a big conversation topic for people, too. It's like, oh my gosh, the Wii Rainbow Road is finally here.
It's very debatable.
Yeah.
Right? Which is your favorite Rainbow Road? And everybody will have a different answer.
Yeah. But it's cool to have them all in one game.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
So I think that that's very smart of them to kind of, you know, do these re-releases of these courses because, people still want to play them and want to talk about them.
Yeah. So before we wrap up our conversation of Mario Kart 8, I gotta ask, what's your favorite Mario Kart 8 track? Because I have an easy pick.
You're going to say Mount Wario.
That's right. And you can say Mount Wario, too. It is objectively the best one.
It is such a good course. Yeah. That one is hard to beat. I do love that one. Gosh, is there another one that like hits the same as Mount Wario? You know, I do like the... Yes?
Yes. Go.
There's a... was it Wario Stadium?
Okay.
That one's pretty fun, too.
All right.
Yeah.
Another one that I would put just a step below Mount Wario is the Excite Bike one.
Oh, that one's really fun.
Which it's like it just like plays off of that kind of jump boosting
right. It feels
mechanic,
good, doesn't it?
And it's like you're just constantly going like super fast. It feels like it's for like pretty skilled play and just like very chaotic. But yeah, the Mount Wario is just like has so many things of it being like this point to point. There's no laps.
Yep.
The downhill part of it.
The slalom.
I love that. Like I really like rally racing games and like the downhill like race is like one of those things that they
you go
have.
Through the woods and you have that like those jumping over those trees, falling
trees.
Right.
You start coming out of a helicopter.
It's cool.
Just incredible
It does
finish.
Feel very like Olympic.
Right.
I will say that I do have a special relationship now with Coconut Mall because we have a famous video that we did, I think, last year when they finally released that course in a booster pack where I had to get pied. The person that lost...
Well, you didn't have to. I mean...
I was going
to
say, the person that lost had to get pied in the face with a coconut cream pie. And
could have gone differently.
I was so close, but I definitely lost, I got pied. But I actually, was okay. Like that pie was pretty good.
You secretly liked it. Okay.
And it was soft.
Weird,
it wasn't like,
weird
it
fact about
it wasn't
you.
Painful.
Loves getting slammed in the face with pies.
You didn't. You were very gentle.
I felt bad. So, like we said, this project, this game that's lasted, from announcement for past 10 years.
Yeah.
I have to ask the logical question to wrap up here is like, what happens next for Mario Kart?
I know.
We had such an interesting conversation on our last full podcast episode about what if people say with Smash Brothers, like, oh, you can't possibly make a new Smash Brothers.
I know, because Ultimate is Ultimate.
Because there's so much in it. And yet, you could say the same thing about Mario Kart. You've crammed everything. You've added all these characters. You've doubled the tracks.
Right.
And yet it still feels like there's a lot more possibility with Mario Kart.
It doesn't feel like the Ultimate yet, doesn't it?
Right.
It feels like there's a Mario Kart 9 in the horizon.
I think so.
And we've been banging this drum for over a year now, because we've been talking a lot about the next Switch 2, or whatever you want to call it. And 100%, the Switch 2 has to launch. The launch title for Switch 2 has to be Mario Kart 9. They must know now that this is a cash cow. You want to make some money? Launch it with Mario Kart 9.
I think it's the ultimate launch game. It truly does reach everybody.
Right.
Obviously the teams had plenty of time to work on something new.
Mr. Yabuki's been pretty quiet.
Right. But I think also, this experience of now releasing this much post-release content over the years, I feel like Nintendo's been learning from that and thinking, I hope, about how to maybe have a more forward-looking plan for post-release content, where all of these things felt like a little reactive.
That's what I was thinking,
This thing's popular. We better keep supporting
it. Doing something. Oh, we can use this thing to sell the NSO. Like, we better keep doing something.
It feels like now they can say, all right, people love Mario
Kart.
Clearly
works.
People are in on us releasing this stuff.
Yeah.
It feels like they can plan out, we're going to support from day one to the last day of this console's existence.
Could be 10 more years.
Post-release support. And I don't think they're looking at it as the Fortnite live service model where it's every month we're grinding out something new.
Check
the Travis Scott concert in Mario Kart.
Oh my God, no.
I don't think it's like that, but it's like every year to year and a half, we will have a substantial new update.
Right.
And when you consider, a 7-8 year life cycle like we got with the Switch, that's a lot of content. That's a lot of reasons for people to come back. That's a lot of extra money you can get out of people.
It's cheaper than doing a brand new game every year.
Right.
And, I think, no pun intended, but, they need to have a roadmap that goes from start to end for this new life cycle. For Mario Kart 9 or whatever they want. Probably Mario Kart 9. They're probably just going to call it that. But, instead of being, very reactive and sort of kind of cobbling this together as it goes, like, I'm sure that they have this, like, master plan, you know, ready to go. And maybe it hooks into other games that are coming out. Hey, maybe when Metroid Prime 4 comes out, we'll get Samus in Mario Kart with a cool, like, now cart that, you know, that looks like something from that
universe. Looks like her ship.
That looks like her ship. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's a way to use Mario Kart, because clearly this is, like, the best-selling game ever, right? Like, use this as, like, a central point for all these things to, like, shoot off of. And that would be really cool for them to have this, like, central pillar for you to do that, you know?
Yeah, to me, that's very appealing. Like, I think that's a better approach than saying, well, we'll release Mario Kart 9 and then we'll release Mario Kart 10 in 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
Because you can just keep building on this base game, which is very good.
Yeah.
The potential downside to that is what we've seen, and I think they would be able to avoid this, what we've seen with some of the Mario sports games recently, where they feel very underbaked day one.
Day one.
And it's like,
yeah,
you took, in totality, what would have been a very full-featured game, and you plucked out 50% of it to kind of, like, fart it out months later for no real reason.
Right.
And I think they are smart enough and know that the scope of this game and the importance of this game to not do that.
Right.
But I think that isn't going to be in the back of the minds of some people if that's what they decide to do.
Right. You can't, like, artificially lengthen something by taking content out of, like, the initial launch.
People can tell.
Exactly. People are not that stupid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they again, the road mapping or the planning of this needs to be, like, really solid, full-fledged game, launch game for Switch 2, and then, like, a really strong roadmap that is consistently timed, that's releasing stuff. Again, maybe it hooks into other things that are coming out to drive interest in those other things, boost interest in those other things. Like, that could be cool, you know? And you can see that Nintendo understands the power of this franchise. It even has transcended games. You know, it is the main ride at Universal. It was a huge plot point in the movie.
Good point.
So all of these things point to, like, we get it. This is big. Like, we're not going to mess it up, you know? So that gives me a lot of confidence. I'm really excited for Mario Kart 9. I think that the imagination for courses are endless, you know? Very different than Smash, where it's very hinged on characters. Like, this is very much like, you can come up with courses forever, you know? You really have no limit to that. So I can't wait to see what they come up with.
How would you feel about a situation where they do start to go down the Smash Ultimate route and bring in for the first time third party characters? In addition to the now very diversified Nintendo roster of you know, Mario, Link, Zelda, we got some F-Zero, we got a little bit of this and that.
I'm open to it.
I feel a little less open to it, actually.
Really?
I feel like I would prefer them to really maximize all of the Nintendo IP.
I mean, they certainly have plenty, yeah.
Before they even start to think about that. I feel like with Smash Ultimate, some of them felt like a bit of a reach to me.
Well, some of them were just like, Mr. Sakurai likes this character, like Terry.
The three people who love Terry Bogard, no offense.
Two people, one of them is Mr. Sakurai, and then two others. It's Mr. Sakurai and two other people.
But, you know, he did envision that of a celebration of broadly all of gaming.
Yeah.
Whereas this is Mario Kart, I think hopefully, at least I say hopefully, some people feel otherwise, I'm sure. Like, I like keeping this in the Nintendo pool.
That's cool.
That feels more thematically
accurate,
in line,
authentic
with what we've got.
Yeah, I'm so impressed with this team's ability to just put so many little details and make these courses with other characters. These are Nintendo characters, obviously, but like the Zelda pack and the Animal Crossing pack, like they've done so much to make it feel very Mario Kart, but also pull in, you know, what makes those games special. Like, I don't doubt that they can bridge that gap. But yes, hopefully it's not a situation where, like, one person is like, I really want this character to be in, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then no one cares.
Yeah.
Because that would be weird.
It does just feel like, you know, again, compared to Smash, like, you know, that kind of core base fight mode is the only mode that can sustain.
Yeah.
Like, with Mario Kart, like, there is this legacy of the battle mode being an important thing. Imagine this. We've had F-Zero 99. Imagine if Mario Kart 99 was just built into Mario Kart 9. It's just a mode in.
That's so cool.
Mario Kart 9, Mario Kart 99. You just add another 9.
Three more 9s. Two more 9s.
One more 9. One more 9. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's a good idea. Maybe it's not. But it does feel like this is just more... There's more openness to new kind of riffs on the base racing.
Yeah. The base racing is like the bread and butter, obviously. Yeah. And again, you can endlessly make courses. Mm-hmm. And then you have all these other things that you could do. Like the battle mode is so good and so much fun. People love the battle mode. So it's not like people are like, ill, don't focus on this at all. Like that's something that they want.
I think they could completely reinvent that too and make that even more of a, you know, big equal part in addition to the racing. So who knows what they'll do next.
But it's going to be good.
Like you, I'm extremely excited for this. I still am in a bit of disbelief that this Mario Kart 8 is completely done. Like when you saw that new image at the end of the credits, that really drove that home. Thanks for playing. But yeah, we had to take a moment to just look back and really celebrate this amazing game.
Yeah, I can't believe that we were pretty much at Nintendo for almost the entire life of this game. Is sort of matched to our life at Nintendo, which is weird. We will start fresh, a new life.
Yeah,
we'll
begin. Born again.
Born again when Mario Kart 9 comes out. And we can look forward to that day together. Yes?
Yeah.
All right, well, let us know what your favorite Mario Kart 8 track is in the comments. If it's Mount Wario, then we are friends forever. All right, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.